Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, y'all? What's up? That's Chuck D and them fighting the power. Back in the day, we're still fighting the power, though. It's a little bit different vibe nowadays. Now, I believe this is Citizen Payne. I'm Eric Payne. This is Kay's son and friends with been found the legendary historian Wayne Dillon, the legendary newsman. Like I said, that's Chuck D and them. Fight the Power came out in 89, I think. And I'm trying to remember if I believe, yeah, I do believe that maybe Dave Dinkins was mayor around the time that this movie came out. Because I do remember, no, I believe he was mayor around the time the other movie came out. And there's something burning my building. The fire department is here banging on somebody's door. But anyway. Whatever it was burning. It's not burning as much as it was before because I smelled something burning before, and it seems to be a lot less right now. But let me see what's going on. I'm bringing Brother Byron Saunders. He could take it away for a couple of minutes. Brother Byron Saunders. Go ahead, handle it for me.
Oh,
let me see what's going on.
Sure, my brother. Thank you. I always love that you start our show with Fight the Power, because you're right. That song, by the way, was remastered in July of 2020 so that it could be updated with, you know, the right rhythms, the right sections. As you know, I'm the historian with the Spike Lee's movie, Do the Right Thing. You may remember Rosie Perez dancing to it at the beginning. That was 1989. So, yeah, you're right on target, my brother. So, anyway, here I am in Washington, D.C., and you know what's going on in our cesspool. As you may or may not know, Washington, D.C. Is better known in the surrounding area of Washington, D.C. as the DMV, District of Columbia, Maryland, and Virginia, the DMV. And you know what happened in Virginia. So I'm going to start off with a little bit of history and context. I just want to ask, for those of you who were given this history lesson in your grade school experience, and it's a history about the Civil War, and it's a test quiz. Get your blue books ready, because if you don't know this, then you didn't get taught the right thing anyway. But this is the only thing you probably learned about the Civil War. Who fired the first shot? That's right. And where was it fired? Oh, by the way, yeah, that was Fort Sumter, wasn't it? And what did they do when they fired the first shot? By the Confederacy, by the way, they planted their flag on government property. Fast forward, 1-6-21, you know, the day of the failed coup d'etat, and for the first time in our nation's history, since the planting of a rebel flag at Fort Sumter, yes, was the rebel flag, the Confederacy flag, planted in our nation's capital. Now, for those of you who have been trying to grapple with critical race theory, at what point do you not draw the line from Fort Sumter to Washington, D.C., 2021, January 6th, with a Confederate flag, nation's capital?
That's a problem.
That's all right. You are absolutely right, because at that moment, that was the shot fired at the federal government, not just
right.
a flag planted, but showing up in armored fighting gear. You and I know that if that was in front of your door right now, SWAT team, whatever, because we got 30 different police forces in the nation's capital. 13, not just one, where you're out there trying to rebuke Black Lives Matter mandate that we have police reform, but 30. I want to know, what town are you living in where you got 30 police departments?
Right.
At this point now, you're seeing, Eric, how we indeed were under attack. Attack. That wasn't an insurrection. It was a failed coup d'etat. And they planted the flag, the Confederacy flag, in the midst of the nation's capital. Now, getting back to Virginia. Folks,
right.
Don't be bamboozled by Republicans saying the reason why they are upset is because of economics. Number one, economics. Everything that they are putting out by policy in state legislatures relative to economics is a racist dog whistle because the policies they're engendering are against people of color. So
right. When
did that stop being about people of color? Number two, education. I just gave you the prime example of the BS about critical race theory because they won't even teach their own history right, all right? Let alone the history that what they're asking us, me and you and Wade and all black people or people of color, is to reject our heroes and sheroes, not just take it out of the public school and the books. They want us to whitewash and forget everything that Martin Luther King Jr. did, Malcolm X, Toussaint Louverture, by the way, happened to be a black man in Haiti. Yes. How about Nat Turner? Reject Nat Turner. How about Marcus Garvey? Reject black. You know what I'm saying? Because at that point, now you're saying to me, reject my heroes and sheroes so that your white little children don't feel bad about themselves. And I want to know, what little white person comes home in their house and says, Mommy, Daddy, I think I've been taught critical race theory.
Right. Well, here's the way that I look at it. Here's the way that I look at it. And I'm going to bring Wayne in a minute. The way that I look at it is like, well, you guys don't want you don't want your children to feel, white parents are saying they don't want their children to feel uncomfortable because of teaching slavery and this, teach that white supremacy and this and that. But
exactly. They
seem not to have a problem with our children feeling some kind of way, understanding that we were slaves.
Hello.
You know, I mean, I know how I felt. It was kind of like, well, yeah, I mean, it's almost like, okay, you want to teach the history that our people were slaves, our children's ancestors might have been slaves, and you don't want to teach who was the slave owner? You just
act like
they're just slaves out of thin air and not teach the other side of history, man. It's crazy.
Now, here's what it's in your backyard, Eric. In your backyard. Y'all came within a hair's breadth of the placing the current Democratic governor in New Jersey with an individual whose main campaign was to legislate against bad language in public? That's all he could come up with? And here's one thing you can best believe. Had he gotten in, you wouldn't know what the first piece of legislation relative to CRT would have been, a rebuke of your uncle's. That's right.
Yes,
your father's Amistad legislation.
Oh, yeah.
Do not be confused. And that's his personal.
Absolutely.
Because you are the son of a man who is considered to be a black hero.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just that it really interesting, and especially like in Virginia, Youngkin using a deceased black author to get over the finish line. It is clear, and I also watched my man sitting in for Nicole Wallace today Jamal, the dark-skinned brother, who's very smart. He was saying it's clear that the coalition, that the voting demographic for Democrats should be, and he's just broken down in the movie, it should be more Fast and Furious, because if you ever see anyone familiar with Fast and Furious movies, very diverse. It's kind of, you know, the new world, not the new world, but very diverse. Vin Diesel, you know, he's a multiracial guy, a white guy who passed away. Yeah. So it was very diverse. He said more of that and less Friends. So Friends got a flack for being a very sterile version of New York City, just all white people for the most part hanging out. Obviously, Fast and the Furious, more of a diverse cast. But he was saying the Democrats need to have the perspective of that's who they should realize that who the party is now, and stop being concerned with moderate individuals who could be swing voters or Republican, moderate Republicans, who basically, when it comes down to it, votes for issues along racial lines. And certainly they talk about the suburban, I don't know what that is, but it's really, you can hear it a lot. He talked about the suburban women, white women in Virginia, that voted to swing this election for the Republican. And you know, all these demographics and these names people want to put on one. At one point it was soccer mom. At one point it was this mom, this dad, whatever. You know, the bottom line is they're always white. They're always, those descriptions always enhance or encompass white individuals of a certain particular, very small category, but they're always white, and they're always kind of talking about that's the voting block we need to get this election to get them to beat so we can get to the next point. And the fact is that they always vote along racial lines, just like when Trump got in and all those white chicks went and they did the Women's March. The day after, they voted for a guy who was voting, who was responsible for taking away a lot of their rights and was really disrespectful to women and had that reputation. So they always vote along their racial lines. Let's bring Wayne in here as we get a little bit further in. We're going to talk about the New York City election and bring in the legendary newsman, Wayne Gilman. How you doing this evening, Wayne?
All right. Forgive my tardiness, man. I got stuck in traffic trying to get back here, but you know, life continues. I'm just so glad, you know, if anyone ever questions about there being not a God out there, you know, Phil Murphy pulled it out. I mean, I know there's no counting. God. I know there's no concession. But I think, you know, from all indications, he's going to serve a second term. And that's an unprecedented situation. Not unprecedented in the last 40 years, I think.
44 years. Let me just make a quick point of information for people who might not know, but it was the outstanding districts were in the city of Newark that they waited to get those final tallies, and that is within the congressional district of Congressman Donald Payne. So in a roundabout way, it was his congressional district that delivered the state and the reelection to the governor. So, as well as the city.
Thank God. And I hope he doesn't forget that, because that means a lot. That really, really means a lot. And, you know, I mean, Virginia, I was talking to Byron yesterday, man. I am so disappointed. I know we still have more work to do. I know that you all have basically dissected most of the controversy with respect to why things are the way they are, but it still bothers me that after what we went through last year, and I know that we have to pull our folks along little by little, you know. I mean, this is not a fashionable election year, because it's considered an off election. You don't have congressional races, it's the local stuff, but all politics begins at home. Anything that you want to register at the very top, you got to start from the bottom and work your way up. And we cannot afford, you know, to have this man serve just one term as president. And I don't think the country, with all due respect, I was in full support of her becoming the vice president, but I don't think that the United States is ready to acknowledge a woman of color as president of the United States. So, you know, expect a challenge in 24. a major challenge.
You know, Wayne, you're absolutely right. Because, see, the trick part of Virginia was the lieutenant governor, a black woman, gun-toting AK-47, former Marine, and see, what Republicans think is so cute of them, because they always play in the race card, they think that because they have this black woman as a lieutenant governor, hold out in her campaign ads, holding that gun, saying I was a former Marine and law and order. Now, everybody who understands the concept of the plantation was you had the master, and then you master hired Simon Legree, his slave sheriff, and what was his job? Keep the colors in
order. Girl, say it.
I know. I have right. So here we go. Black woman hired with AK-47, proving that she's going to be the spokesperson for law and order. What does that mean? She's going to come into our community and do more rough riding on her own people of kind, so she can prove to her white master that she is a formidable and a person that white people can actually appreciate. Excuse me,
Not to cut you off, Byron, but I think that is a phenomenon that we really, really have to explore, because you know there were some, Republicans of color who were worthy of the recognition. They upheld whatever personal beliefs we had. We're not a monolith. You know, we come from all stripes, colors, walks of life, philosophies, and stuff like that. I look at Colin Powell. It stood in amazement tonight. I was watching Joy Reid briefly before getting in here, and I see Condoleezza, I was about to call it Carolina, but Condoleezza Rice has, that was my, joke back in the day, but she walked back some of her comments previously about, the whole January 6th insurrection. So either somebody spoke to her, or she had a bad day when she was on The View and just blurted out what she thought. But she has had a propensity for saying things. But there are people like the Michael Steels who are of the Lincoln Project. That kind of Republican I could deal with. We may have philosophical differences about certain things, but it's the Adam West in Texas. It's the young lady, as you just cited, in Virginia there, the Secretary of State. I mean, it's bothersome, but these people have to be called out.
It's the House Negroes. It's the House Negroes.
Yeah, they got to be called out.
That's it. Yeah,
right.
Absolutely. And the thing that these journalists talking heads, black and white, especially on CNN, MSNBC, I heard the other night a Pulitzer Prize winning Eugene Russell. You've seen him on MSNBC, Washington Post editorialist, being in conversation with a former white Republican woman from the state of Virginia, and she's espousing all that racist stuff. It's time for our talking heads to turn politely to them and put them back on their heels and say, you're doing nothing but espousing white supremacy and racism and calling it something else. You need to stop it, because every time you open your mouth about it, I'm going to call you out on it. That's all he's got to say. That's all he's got to say. And put her back in her Pandora's box, because they think that they're privileged enough to say anything they want to. Coming up and say, well, I'm a Youngkin supporter, but I was against this insurrection. How do you support Youngkin and be against Trump and the insurrection when they're one in the same? She's throwing smoke up our asses and trying to make us think, oh, it's not raining, but I'm going to piss all over you.
That's an old trick that they've been doing forever. And also too, since people listen to us, and being conservative is not a bad thing. That's not when we say certain people are House Negroes, because they do stuff that are anti the ethnic group that they're from, and people can say, they just because they have a different perspective, black people are not a monolithic group. But when you have individuals whose efforts seem to systematically and unfairly hurt the group that they are a part of, then they can reasonably be called a turncoat or a traitor or in this case, a house Negro, which is the slang term for people, black people of color who've done that. Since we know that we might have from time to time some conservative people like our friend Joe who chimed in that like to listen to the show. So we don't. It's not about ideology if you're a black who happens to be conservative, strong on law enforcement, believe in gun rights and all that things. And all of those great American concepts, we're just saying that they should be meted out, delivered, judged upon with the same even hand for everyone. And certainly any reasonable person that's paying attention can realize and see that that has not been the case and that black people have been dealt with at the very least unfairly in this country. And the fact that that attempts are constantly made to not teach education, to find ways to not tell the truth, to make the automatic assumption that kids – first off, obviously, we know the whole myth of critical race theory. That's just a talking point for their party because that's not even being taught in the school system. It's on a college level. But okay. But the notion remains and it has remained like the Daughters of the Confederacy years ago when they literally lobbied and made particular communities change what the history books were saying about the Confederate soldiers and the Confederacy. And that's how they romanticized it. You know, just like they're saying, we don't want our kids to feel a certain way. How are we supposed to feel? How are black people supposed to feel when they see monuments and statues and things of admiration and honor to people who were slave owners or people who marched to keep people in chains? So, you know, the whole notion of people teaching, it really is an interesting perspective of white supremacy. I mean, someone that just really believes that they're superior, and that's the way things are supposed to be, right? They really believe that certain people are subhuman, clearly believe that are beneath them, because the whole notion of assuming that you can even fix your mouth to say, well, I don't want my kids to learn that because I don't want them to feel bad about themselves, even though it's history, it's fact. What are you saying now? And to push an entire movement to change the educational system to say, well, leave the certain subjects to the parents. Yeah, parents, that's taking the whole kind of notion of parents being involved in their children's education, flipping the whole shit on its head and saying we just want to teach our kids what we want them to know and indoctrinate them in the belief system that we have, and that's a valid thing. Except when that belief system is one that inhibits upon other people's freedoms, right? When you teach them that none of that should happen. So those people, that's where you run into problems. Right. Conservative people who might be listening in, there's no problem with people bringing up their kids the way they want. But when they start teaching them stuff that perhaps might infringe upon other people's rights or things that aren't factually correct. Like, everybody got to agree on certain facts in the world. But so we all agree that we need air to breathe. We all agree that you've touched fire, your ass is going to burn. We all agree that if you jump in the water with a bunch of sharks, you're probably going to get bit. There's certain facts in the world that we can't change that we should all agree upon so we have a basic foundation of understanding in life. 1 + 1 = 2, right? Man and a woman. You need a man and a woman. This is for the conservatives, for you conservatives. You do need a male and a female to make a baby, right? So, because I know they have got issues with people with LGBTQ and all that. So there's certain facts that we all need to accept and understand. Outside of
how you teach your
people to process information, how to react within those facts and perimeters in the world and interact with other individuals. Yeah, that can be an individual thing. That could be a family philosophy, family, what your family teaches and your morality. But to decide you're going to teach them the facts, and I don't want them to learn the facts. I don't want my kids to learn that history because I don't want them to feel bad. That is something that comes from a supremacist perspective, right? To me.
Right. Absolutely.
I don't want them to hear anything
right
that's going to make
assessment.
Them unhappy.
And, you know, the one thing we have not heard throughout this whole entire dissecting of what happened on Tuesday's election all across the country, the one factoid that nobody has brought up yet to show me what was the turnout of black voters in percentage to what turned out in 2020. And there lies the problem, because you and I both know that when they said and made these promises to us, oh, we'll have an infrastructure bill and we're going to have a filibuster buster September. Oh, it became then, well, later September. And then it became October. And then it became later October. And then Thursday, Biden's supposed to go over to see the Pope. Oh, we'll have this done so that hopefully we'll have it done. In Europe, well, President Biden, it's the night before the election, we're going to win. Now, me and you, the educated, understanding the concept of the broken promises and the lies told for 400 years, and now you want me to roll back and bring you my vote when, Governor Wilder, the first black governor of the state of Virginia, was asked about McAuliffe, and he said, you know, when he was in office, what did he do for us when he was in office? He tried to reduce funding to the HBCU. He tried to convince black legislators to resign. And we're supposed to forget that? Well, Mr. McAuliffe, what are you doing to promise us what will be better than what you did before? And you think Virginia voters don't remember your previous record? See, that's where it comes down to. And now all of a sudden, you're trying to figure out, well, what happened? Well, I can tell you what happened. White supremacy and racism within the Democratic Party. And when he came back, the president, from Europe, and with the known fact that he lost Virginia, that's the very day when he said, I want to see you Manchin and Sinema in my office right now. Take them into the woodshed, do the Tar and Feather Act, and say, I can't say it on TV, on air, on radio, but you effed up. And you threw the people of Virginia under the bus because you sacrificed some time to think, well, I'm not sure about paid family leave. You promised us 10 Republicans, Joe Manchin, and where are they? You came up with nothing. You've lied to us. So we're supposed to now believe you, great white father of the year? Like the Indian said, you speak with forked tongues.
I tell you, Byron, I agree with you to a certain extent, but I also feel that we pay a large price when we sit home in protestation over people's lack of doing what should be done.
I agree.
I mean, there should be a forum to call out, you know, stuff like that. I applaud Doug Wilder, you know, the past governor, you know, and I think it was good for him to say these things, but it should have been amplified way before, because when we sit at home, you know, we allow a Youngkin, and this is what these idiots want. You see, Trump already's taking credit for it, you know, and it could have worked in Jersey. I mean, it bothers me. I mean, I was reliant on that early vote, you know, the one that was cast before Election Day, because it seems to be part of a Republican trend that they're going to come out on Election Day regardless of where they are. They could be in communist China. We're going to vote that day. But the bottom line is, you know, we can't afford, you know, to slip through the cracks. And I just feel all the more reason for forums like this and others to let people know we should not sleep on such and such. We cannot afford to go back. I'm waiting to see what changes are going to happen here in New York. You know, we have somebody who perceived as being progressive. I've known and interviewed some people who worked alongside him when he was in the police department. I see the rampant amount of crime that was going on in Brooklyn when he was borough president. So now that he is the head person in charge, we're going to see. I mean, he's talking about bringing back stop, question, and frisk, maybe to a certain extent.
Yeah, right.
You know, I wonder about that.
Right. Well, let's start off with this black mayor. Let's put once again positive assumptions out there and say, assume that I think personally it's a good thing that you have that this mayor that happens to be black, that only the second black mayor of New York comes from a certain perspective, and that he's also a black law enforcement officer, because I think that also subliminally sends a certain message to people who are interested in getting empowered in their community and getting involved at that level. I think that he's an example of that. When black people get involved in those type of positions of responsibility within our community, we can have affect a bigger change when we're basically, you know, when we're in those positions of leadership and power to a certain degree, I guess is what I'm saying, because, you know, it's a rippling effect, I think. So I think for me, the first kind of impressions I'm going to put out into the environment is positivity for this guy, considering what was the alternative. And that's the whole thing. You know, I think sometimes what? We need to afford ourselves as a people the right for us to be mediocre if other people are going to be able to be mediocre as well, even if you think one thinks that Eric Adams might be a mediocre mayor, which I don't think you might be, but I'm going to, like I said, put out the positive face or positive energy out there for him to have the most success possible.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
Go ahead, yeah. Wayne. Go ahead. Wayne, one of the things you said, which I want to remind you, historically, voter suppression and oppression is not just at the ballot box. Yes, they intimidate us at the ballot, at the box, at the registration to get a voter card. But the worst part of voter suppression and oppression is by fear.
Right.
Use those critical theories of impacting fear into a community that says, if you show up to vote, we know what we're going to do with you. And that's not going to leave our psychology as long as we keep being impacted day day out. And I agree with you, we should know better and come out. But that's part of the oppression and suppression.
Well, I think that it's not fear anymore. I think it is what Wayne's point was, that it's apathy, and people are kind of have that, to me, I'm saying that a defeatist mentality almost. And I was thinking the same thing, Wayne, that we need to understand that we're not doing the Democratic Party, we're not doing anybody any favors by coming out and vote. We're protecting our own interests, you know, and it's really sink or swim now. I mean, that's how our community needs to look at it. Like, you better get out there and vote, because we're protecting what little we have now. It ain't about, you know, Democrats saying, well, we need the help of the African-American community. No, we're voting our interest. And maybe it does indicate that we need to think about rethink some alliances and things like that, when we have to definitely go from a transactional perspective in terms of what we need. But you know, we have to really start to look at it that way, and not act like we have the luxury not to show up and not to vote.
Right,
that's absolutely
that's
right.
The
Kerner report, after each of the riots prior to that, came out with one consistent element in their report, that when the community people started burning down their stores, even in Baltimore after the young man got killed in the back of the ambulance, all of the have been consistent with that report, that identified one factoid in each one of those incidents. Black people who were pissed off and burned things said to everyone to a point, what do we own? What do we own? So if you think I'm burning down my home, I don't own it. I'm renting it from a landlord who's trying to take every penny I got. So it's that's part of the fear factor. It's fear, gentlemen.
Well, that's also
that we do
crazy things and burn up our own. I don't own anything, and it's the landlords, but it's still the things that service our community. For example, when you're talking about that riot in Baltimore at the time, but they burned down the CVS. That was the only CVS in the hood.
Exactly.
That was the only CVS in the hood that the people needed, that elderly people needed to get their medication. So the concept or that frustration needs to be channeled. We're really starting to accept the idea of mental health in the black community, which is something that the psychosis on the community as a whole is being accepted, and how discrimination has affected the mental health of the entire race as a whole, I believe, and understanding that why, you know, that human nature to turn that anger and frustration inward, you know, which is, you know, we know that that's centuries old. But it's, I mean, it's why that people that live in the hood or in ghettos or in places with no hope, predominantly usually throughout history has been our people or other marginalized people in the community, that they turn their frustration inward. I mean, that's kind of human nature also, isn't it? And
yeah.
So, but
you know, I'd like to think that we've gone, we've come a long way since those, you know, days back in the late 1960s. You know, I mean, I lived through that. You know, I came from a community in which that a lot of that went on. But I also think that, you know, there are some people out there that were trying to establish a foothold by having invested in the community. And unfortunately, when they're victimized, it sort of defeats the purpose of, I understand your anger and rage, you know, mm-hmm. but it also defeats the purpose of what we're trying to build. So I think one thing I will say, the civil rights movement did give birth to a completely different concept as how we view our communities, but much work is still needed to hold on to what little we have, you know, especially when I go to Brooklyn and I see how gentrified it is, you know.
Gentrification, taking back the property that we work blood, sweat, and tears to own, and then they keep raising the tax base, and the houses go from affordable to $1 million complex, a brownstone. That's how we are being shown we will take away that what you have worked so hard to gain. As a grant writer, one of the things I noticed when I would write grants for the historic houses that I was running is that basically, the grants that I had to go through was a special program for that New York State Council for the Arts was running that was always marginalizing the community as underrepresented, underserved, undergiven any kind of art. And we're talking about people who are paying $700,000 for their home. So at one point, you're marginalizing, calling us impoverished people. That's not how it's done. So the gentrifier comes in, and immediately it becomes, you go through down Fulton Street right today, and at nighttime on Saturday, you got white folks walking up and down the streets with their baby carriages. Now, how do you know this? Okay?
Yeah.
So when did this become the norm that we can't even walk down our own neighborhoods because we're out there worried about somebody shooting and killing and stabbing and selling drugs, you know? And so all of a sudden, because they're back in our neighborhood, it's going to stop? Well, no, because now they're the pushers. They're the ones who are pushing the element of the understanding that they know the precinct down the street know who's selling the drugs. They know who's bringing in the high-end part of the drugs. We don't create the cocaine. We don't create the high-end price drugs. Somebody is allowing that to come into that community and then saying, we're going to take it and change it. And now it's becoming more white. It's happening in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
The house that I'm living in right now costs about $14,000 when back in the 50s and 60s. Today, on the market, it's a $700,000 home. Same house. Same house. So how do you explain that? You see what I'm saying? Because at that point, it is a intentional effort to move us out and take over what we worked more than hard enough to hold on to, raising a middle class that was allowed because of government employment, which is all there is in D.C. We don't have factories. We don't have that outside where people can work for Ford and work for General Motors and work for all the big Fortune 500 companies. We have nothing but government here. So how does a neighborhood that grew up with middle-class black people all of a sudden can't afford to live in the house that they paid and worked and made possible for their kids to grow up to be better? And now you're taking it out from underneath us. because you want white folks to come in and repopulate a community that for the longest was 70% black. D.C.
Right.
was over 70% black. And
right.
it's the
Wayne,
biggest
Wayne,
in
got
this country.
Got it, Byron. Wayne, what do you, I mean, that's certainly a serious subject that's happening throughout the country.
throughout the country.
I want to move on to something else, and I want to ask you, Wayne, what's your assessment about the future for New York? I mean, in terms of Eric Adams, because it seemed as though the Republicans letting someone like Curtis Sliwa run for mayor, they weren't really serious about it, and we know that.
No, they weren't serious about it at all. And I tell you, to be honest with you, I even question even some of the money that he was able to raise to run spots on TV. I mean, primetime shows, you know. I mean, I knew Curtis way back when. I know he's been through 3-4 marriages. He's not the person physically he used to be. And, you know, he talks a lot of nonsense. But there are other Republicans out there that they don't come from a talk radio background, that are legitimately politicians who probably could have run as a Republican a candidate against the Democrats. But, you know, this has just been a peculiar season politically. You know, I mean, they had some great people on during the primaries in the Democratic Party. I didn't see much of that going on for the Republican Party. I know that there's an effort to bring a balance back, but I mean there was so much going on, and I think part of it has a lot to do with the fact that there's only one county in the five counties that make up New York City that basically has a Republican foothold, and that is Staten Island, you know.
Right.
And after what Trump did in the last 4 years, I think a lot of people were just not feeling this would be a time to run someone, like, unless they had someone like a Michael Bloomberg who switched from Democrat to Republican because he couldn't run as a Democrat, or George Pataki type. You know, it would have to be one of those things, you know?
Yeah.
You have a black district attorney for the first time in Manhattan.
Right. Bragg. I'm waiting to see. I think he's going to have a great job in trying to rein in some of the problems with the flow of guns in his town. He was already talking about that, and the work that he did prior to winning this seat, he was already working in the district attorney's office. So if he could just bring that forward. And then, pretty soon this state may be something to reckon with if Tish James, I have nothing against the lady who's running New York now, basically by default because Cuomo couldn't hold on to his seat. But, Tish James, the state attorney general, just recently announced that she wants to be governor. So it's going to be very interesting what goes on here. You know, I think next year is going to be a very interesting year. But as far as I'm concerned, it was time for a society, an electorate that is predominantly of color in New York to have another person mm-hmm. of color running the mm-hmm. city. I think this is going, I think there's been like a 20-year gap between Dinkins and Adams, you know?
Therefore, it's
going to be interesting to see what happens.
I find it interesting, too, how Rudy was campaigning for Curtis Sliwa, even though Eric Adams was the former police officer. I guess Rudy, since Sliwa was a Republican, I guess that's Rudy's excuse. But you know, it's interesting how these people change up their value system depending on the day of the week.
Rudy's I really think that he should just stay home and await whatever is coming before him with respect to legal challenges, because I would be more focused on that than trying to support someone who clearly did not have a chance of becoming mayor. you know, in my opinion. I think there's a lot of smoke and mirrors with Curtis. There are things that he says that, you know, make sense, and but, you know, you look at him, and it's – I know Eric referred to him as being a buffoon, but – you know, there's a similarity there that, you know, one would have to stop and look at. Is this a circus routine, or is he genuinely looking to change things in the city? The fact that he was struck by a cab days before the election, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Strange things happen to him, but I've seen stranger things happen in this town. And, it's amazing. It's just amazing.
You know,
but I don't.
Something
bad.
No, I was gonna say something we've been talking about. I know I've been talking about it, but I really think and concerned about as we go like in another 14 minutes. But I don't know. In Virginia, it seemed that McAuliffe was notwithstanding what you said that Doug Wilder revealed about Terry McAuliffe in Virginia. Perhaps should have been revealed a lot earlier as opposed to later, but I wonder why he was the choice. You know, he seemed to be the strongest choice to run for governor down there. I wonder why there were no other potential Democrats down there. Secondly, this is the Democratic Party as a whole, and you guys know I've been saying this. We need new PR. We need the PR people that the Republicans have, because we don't answer any of the lies. We don't, like I said, we should have had our own war machine that discredited a president who encouraged an insurrection, and should have made the notion of his name even being mentioned in the same sentence as running again, should have been able to make that whole notion so ridiculous that no one would even mention that possibility. But the Democrats never did that. And clearly that's as a reflection of what went down in Virginia and almost jumped off here in Jersey. And for some reason, our ability or our willingness to A, be go on the offensive, right, and B, to really, you know, brag upon what we did. Talk about what we did, and C, maybe, which ought to be A, actually get the shit done. Because we want to, you know, I'm not mad at people who are progressive and people are holding up this and holding up that. But, and besides the ones that whose real objective is to hold it up, I think that Manchin and Sinema, I think their objective is really not to get anything done, to really play the spoiler in this. I know that on the other end of the spectrum, I believe that the people that are the progressives that are holding things up because what they're trying to do, I believe that they're genuine in trying to get done something, but their willingness to hold out for the perfect. And what's that saying? Don't spoil the bad for the perfect or whatever. You know, that's,
yeah.
I mean, you know, it's like you got to get something done.
There's a lot of sense in that.
And also, too,
you're right.
The average person the average citizen can't afford to wait. That's what some of these people don't realize. The average citizen is like hand to mouth. You guys are making six figures. So while each day, anybody on the street that's living the struggle to put and make ends meet and scrape together whatever they can scrape together to survive and support themselves or their family if they have one, every day is a struggle. And so that's why I understand representatives that are fighting for people and all that, but they got to understand at a certain point, if the people you're representing, you're trying to get them $1,000 and all you can get is $800, there's people who say, well, like, let me get the $800 right now and let's come back and work on the rest. Let's not
There's a woman who, not to cut you off, Eric, Congresswoman member Bush, I think she's from the Midwest, I forgot exactly where, and you know, her whole story is that, you know, she was lived in poverty, abject poverty.
Yep.
She I was homeless on the street, blah blah blah, and you know, she's so adamant about, you know, finding the funds and not supportive of anything. She's not looking to bend in any way, and I think I hope, if anything, if she's listening tonight, what you just said basically echoes my sentiment, and I'm certain a lot of her constituents, you know.
I mean, I love
you
Kate
have
Bush,
to bend.
I mean, that's I love her, and I know that she's someone. I don't think she's the type that would hold out to get nothing. I think she'll hold out until she can get what she can get for her people. She's the type, that knows what, like you said, she's been there. She knows what it's like. She knows that one day even is too long of not being able to find something to eat or try to have to find a roof over your head. So, I mean, I'm a big fan of Corey Bush. I mean, she might be a part of that extreme progressive group of people, but I think that if she is, I believe she is a little bit more genuine because she's walked it and talked it than a few others who, you know, you grew up in the neighborhood, yeah, we understand, but I don't really think you had it as hard as some other people, you know, and you know, when they start trying to pass that progressive litmus test, they should be a little bit leery about who they're trying to compare themselves to, you know.
As a historian, we have to realize and recognize the DNA of both parties. The reason why black people were party of Lincoln is because who gave them the Emancipation Proclamation?
Mm-hmm.
Boom, there it is. And for years, no matter what happened, black people were loyal to the Republican Party. But if you understand the DNA and how they became, they switched, it's because those Dixiecrats back in 1964, you know them, Stimson and all those other ones who flipped because Fannie Lou Hamer got up there at the Democratic National Convention and stirred it up, tore it up. And at that point, they told Johnson, Lyndon Johnson, you make these bills happen, we will leave this party. And what did they do? They became Republican. So it switched. The DNA actually switched, fellas. So now, let's just fast forward ahead. And something that happened this very weekend that talks about the privilege of white men. Aaron Rodgers tested positive for COVID, and it was revealed he did not take a shot. How many weeks were we on ESPN and The Nation talking about Kyrie Irving? What about Kaepernick? So here we are with an absolute issue of white privilege because the media, the team knew about it, the NFL knew about it, and ultimately, had it been revealed, he should be thrown out of the league and kept from playing because now he's been doing commercials. You've seen the commercials, okay? State Farm, okay? You've seen him in everything, and he's the face of the NFL today, which means now he's also the face of what's wrong in our country because he's a denier. He's a liar. He has been perpetuating the big lie just like white folks in the Republican Party. And talk about those progressives in the DNA of the Democratic Party. Talk about who are they actually making legislation for. Because as far as I can remember, at this very moment, the other side has not put up one piece of legislation since they've been offered. So what are they doing? They're taking up space and doing nothing. I wish I had a $400,000 a year job just doing what they do. And with health benefits,
I don't get it.
No, I don't think they make $400,000.
I don't get that. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
Because at the point,
Kyrie Irving
why
included.
Are we even entertaining Aaron Rodgers? Deal. He should have been kicked out of the league and told point blank. The NFL commissioner has told us 96% of the league is been vaccinated. And here your faith of your entire league, MVP, potential a Hall of Famer.
Well, they just found out, right?
Like Barry Bonds. That's like Barry Bonds being questioned because he was what? Putting on a steroid? Oh, my God.
They just found out that that Rodgers lied, basically, right? They just figured it out or whatever.
The team knew, Eric.
They're saying the team knew it. That he was supposed to be getting testified. I mean, he was supposed to be getting tested like every week or something like that or whatever.
Every day. Everybody
and
else.
And they said he had the antibodies, right, if I'm
week.
Not mistaken. Didn't he say that?
He had the antibodies. He has not had that protocol where they can wash your blood and put it back in your system.
Yeah,
he has not gone through that.
Right. Yeah, because antibodies is not going to save your life at this point.
Exactly.
You know, it's already been
proven. We're talking about the systemic part of this because it is systemic. And when you, and just like that guy last week who called, saying that he was from Montana, he trolled us. And he was just hoping he could get off on his platform and then embarrass us. So we proved one thing. He cannot call up three intelligent black men and get us to think that he is not BSing us and trolling us. We put him back in his place like you were supposed to. And you're not going to hear back from him.
I'm certain he's still listening. And what
please,
little
I
we
hope
did
he is,
here,
because I wanted
you know,
to
was...
know, we busted it. When you asked question about the vaccination, and I said, did you get vaccinated to go to school? Abba, Abba, Dabba. You heard it right
exactly.
here in the air.
You know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the exact details are with the Aaron Rodgers situation, with how they were letting him play. If they already knew, if they knew that he wasn't vaccinated, or what is the protocol there, and why now it's just now coming out and is the big deal. But clearly, it's like a double standard. Obviously, hey, I think that you know that's the starting quarterback, and he wasn't going to play, and they wanted to win, you know. And
at what cost? Life and death?
Yeah.
The President of the United States, everywhere he had an event, he was the super spreader. So at what cost? We elect leaders to do principled things about respecting law and order, support the Constitution as the laws are written, feed the hungry.
We're talking about Aaron Rodgers right now,
right?
We're talking about Aaron Rodgers, a football player, right?
Hopeless. But he's the leader of his team, Eric. He's jeopardizing every one of those players.
Well, yeah, he definitely did.
Well, let's go Jets tonight.
he definitely did all that. It's interesting. Certainly, he reveals that double standard for sure, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it reveals, you know, the whole thing about the okay, we got to go. It's like a – Oh no, we got another.
Oh my gosh, yeah, we
I'm tripping.
We
got
into it tonight.
But it's the whole thing about, you know, people, you know, you understand on one hand, obviously, you can't tell somebody to go ahead and have to inject a vaccine or put anything in their body, but also too, the whole shit is about want people to be reasonable, right? I mean, obviously, our society has to thrive because motherfuckers are going to be reasonable with each other, you know. The extreme behavior, extreme concepts are shit that runs counterproductive to to people trying to live together in a reasonable fashion. It's like, you know, let's just have peace and stuff. It's like the whole concept of our whole way of life was interrupted because we had a guy in the White House who was incompetent in terms or didn't want to admit that this was a difficult or hard thing to go through in terms of handling the pandemic, and so was willing to just BS everybody so much to the point where you're putting people's lives in danger. You know, that's the whole fucked up thing about it, and people aren't able to realize, you know, bottom line, you know, the United States is it got it pretty good compared to other countries, right? And it does not make any sense for everybody to be at each other's throat and the chaos to be happening and to be messing with people's daily lives. You know, the convenience of living in America, being able to turn on the ball game, being able to go to the football game, you know, to go out to see a show, to the movies. That's the whole fucking convenience. That's what we sell to the world, the American way.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
And these idiots say that they don't seem to understand. They get that mixed up with their image that they projected of the superior male, whatever. But, you know, that whole kind of white supremacist thing that people get caught up in, some people get caught up in that seem to practice that. But we got to go, gentlemen. Byron, give the people your send-off, your last couple of words of advice that you would partake.
Fight the power. I like fight the power. We have the power. Now stand up and keep fighting. Carpe diem. Grab it, hold it, and never let it out of your fist. Raise that fist and say, power, baby. That's
very
what it's
good.
All about. Peace and love
very
always.
Good. Brother Byron Saunders, legendary historian. We'll talk to you again, my brother. Brother Wayne Gilman, legendary newsman. Give the people your last parting words of advice.
Hey, man. Keep the faith. That's all I can say. I can't top Byron this week. And
keep the
you
faith,
know, that's
baby.
All we can say. All
that's
right.
Some black power shit right there. Keep the faith, baby. All right, Wayne Gilman. Legendary newsman. We'll talk again.
All right.
I'm Eric Payne, K's son, Citizen Payne, known to some. I rhymed right there, right? Like I'm rapping. Ha! This is Kay's Son and Friends. We do this semi-regular. That's Chuck and them with the remix for Fight the Power. So, till next time, and we'll have a lot to talk about again. We'll talk to you again. Kay's Son and Friends. Peace.
Nobody's agreeing. They say it's suicide with dead bodies swinging. Cowards are hunting black men. That's what I'm seeing.